Aho Mano Wabin, this is Aho Mano Nikon, the podcast with Josh and Sam.
So this episode will be Thanksgiving, right? I wanted to actually go back and tell a story about the moose. Sam is going to give us a narrative at the end of a Wabansi. We're going to talk about Thanksgiving, of course. And before we really get started, Sam, I have one question for you. It's really been on my mind. I got some dogs, but I think you got a lot of dogs. How do you keep those things from being tangled?
So this has really been on my mind lately. This process of untanglement, I jokingly say that that's what I do with most of my time, is I spend it untangling dogs. I have a couple of dachshunds everybody knows, and to make it easier on myself, whenever they go outside, I've rigged up a couple of little leashes for them, and they each have their own leash, and they can run, and of course, they've scoured out everywhere that they can, and that way I can stay inside. And I only do it because I'm worried about them. I'm worried about them running out into the road. I had one run out into the road one time, and it didn't turn out so well. Well, anyway, so I recognize that I put these leashes on these dogs. It's for me, and I tell me it's because I love them, right? I love these dogs. I don't want them to get hurt, and so I put these leashes on them. And the more that I look at it, or the more that I don't pay attention, their leashes tangle every day, every time. And over time, these leashes, they've got bumps and things in them so that they naturally catch each other. And any time that I'm not paying attention to them, their leashes tangle. And for some reason, whenever I do pay attention and don't interact, they intertangle less. And so I saw an experiment where they were firing light photon beams through slits. And it had to do with how our attention, how if when we pay conscious attention to things, conscious attention to things, then it goes smoother. And so I've been trying to, you know, disprove this theory by on my own with dog leashes, and I can't.
So Orion is known as the Winter Maker, and after, to the east of that is a bunch of stars, and they're actually referred to as the moose. And when you see the moose, you know the moose are coming. And years ago, before we actually caught the moose, everyone always thought, you know, we chase bears, we chase buffalo, but no one ever mentions the moose. You know, the moose from Rocky and Bullwinkle? The moose. Okay, so let's get to the story. Close your eyes and sit back and imagine. One night, late in the fall, the moose family was sitting in their lodge. As they sat around the fire, a very odd thing happened. Floating in through the door came a long pipe, sweet smell and smoke from the air. I like to pretend it was a cherry tobacco smoke. It circled the pipe circled the lodge, passing close to each of the moose people. The old bull moose, he ignored it. But when it came to the young bull moose, he took the pipe and began to smoke it. An old bull moose looked down and said, "You just killed our family. The pipe is from the human people who smoked it to ask for success in tomorrow's hunt. Now tomorrow, because you smoked the pipe, they will be able to find us." Young bull moose said he wasn't afraid because he could outrun the human people. They could not catch him. With closed eyes, old bull moose said nothing more. In the morning, the moose people left their lodge to look for food, but as soon as they got to the edge of the forest, they smelt the scent of the hunters. The moose people started to run, and the hunters, who seemed swifter than normal, faster than usual, followed them. Young bull moose said, "I can outrun them," and he ran, and he outrun the others, confident he could do it, but soon he grew tired, and when he looked over his back, the hunters were still there, faster than normal. And quickly and unexpectedly, they reached him, and they killed him. The human people then thanked him for smoking their pipe and giving himself so that they could survive. His body was treated with care, his spirit soothed. That night, young Bull Moose woke up in his lodge surrounded by his family. Next to his bed was a present given to him by the human hunters. The present, which he showed to the entire family, was a long pipe. You see, it wasn't wrong for me to accept the pipe the humans sent us. The humans treated me with respect. It is all right to allow the human beings to catch us. And so as to this day, hunters who show respect to the moose are always the ones who are successful when they hunt. What did you learn in school about Thanksgiving?
You know, the number one thing I remember learning about Thanksgiving in school was how to draw a turkey with my hand. Other than that, it was belt buckles and boats and good times, man.
That's funny about the turkeys with the fingers and the ham, because my kids just came home with two pictures of those turkey hands. So that's what we're learning in school. Turkeys and fingers and hands. Did we really slaughter turkeys? Where did the turkey come from? Any idea?
Actually, I don't know. I'm sure there were some turkeys there to eat. I never thought of that. Where did the turkey come from? I do know that the turkey at one point was going to be the bird of the country instead of the eagle.
So when did Thanksgiving really start? Some say it started in 1619. As Virginia celebrated with an annual day of thanks. Others said it was started in 1637 when the Massachusetts colony governor declared a day to give thanks for the fact that colonial soldiers recently slaughtered over 700 members of the Pequot tribe, including women and children, in Connecticut. Some say George Washington declared a holiday, but it was in the spring. In 1769, a group of Pilgrim descendants who lived in Plymouth, looking to boost tourism, started the idea that they were the Pilgrims were the fathers of America, and they said the footnote that the first Thanksgiving, the Great Festival, was New England, and soon later, Abraham Lincoln declared a holiday during the Civil War to foster unity. So a day of thanks, really, is more about the Civil War, not anything else. And back in 1621, the Pilgrims at the time, if they were giving thanks, is that they were actually fasting, not feasting. It was quiet contemplation. Now, if they were rejoicing, which is what they were doing at this time in 1621, it was actually drinking heavily, militia drills, target practice, contest of strength. Speed is a big party. It's basically people shooting stuff up. And whenever this was happening, the Wampanoags heard all the firing of the guns, so they went to go help them out. When they got there, the Pilgrims thought they were being attacked because of like, why are all these Indians showing up? So there you have it. It just kept getting worse and worse between the two. So, Thanksgiving, basically, 1863 is where it really came from. It was Abraham Lincoln, just called it a national holiday, just because of the Civil War. Nothing else. Has nothing to do with Pilgrims, has nothing to do with Indians, it just has to do with the Civil War and a truce, trying to give a day where everybody just sits back and spends time with family and feasting. It's amazing how wrong the history books are, right? All the time. It's history, not history.
Sam, in your retrospects, what do you think about Thanksgiving? Is there any certain special, I mean, what's your viewpoint? The traditional way, I guess. I mean, we could talk about the Oneidas. The Sioux, the Pilgrims, the massacre. What's your viewpoint, Sam? Maybe George the Washington Destroyer, right?
What I want to know is like, how they make a day, like, with so much pie. Like, they don't focus on pie. Like, they just don't, they don't even recognize that that's clearly the best part of the day is pie. Like, you, some days you might have no pie, and other days you might have, I don't know, one type of pie. But this is a day that you, I mean, a lot of people have three types of pie right there. I don't know. They'll make up any reason not to enjoy the pie, you know? Like, if you could fucking be having pie, not even great pie, just having pie over there and sitting on a chair. It's not maybe the best chair, but you close your eyes and you can imagine anywhere in the world you sitting right there, like on a throne or over a waterfall or on top of a rainbow. It doesn't matter to me. You could be riding on an eagle, eating pie, and you can close your mouth, you can close your eyes, and you can taste that pie. Now, you could either be right there in your crappy chair, or you could be somewhere amazing in the world, any of those spots, up on a star, riding a star, whatever you feel like. And if you didn't have pie, you wouldn't have pie. So, there's pie. Three kinds for a lot of you out there. Flapjacks and gravy. Flapjacks and gravy. Flapjacks and gravy, baby. Flapjacks and gravy, flapjacks. Flapjacks and gravy, flapjacks and gravy.
And if you want to, if our listeners want to support the mission, I guess, of Sam and myself, feel free to go to our webpage. It's anchor.fm/mno-nikan. You can find us on Spotify or whatever to help support us. Just go to our webpage, click support, and a couple options will pop up. You know, it's amazing how far 99 cents will go to two guys like us, right? So hopefully right now we're actually trying to get money, do some traveling, because I really want to go up north and you know, really get some good stuff going. So thank you in advance, Miigwech. All right, back to the show.
I asked Sam to give us a story, to pick someone out to kind of give a narrative, a history narrative of, and he did one over Waubonsie. So take it away, Sam.
Life of Waubonsie, warrior chief of the Potawatomi, as written by Joseph Napoleon Bersall. Chief Waubonsie never lived in Kansas, but his name is perpetuated here in a county, township, village, and lake. Waubonsie was born in Terrecoupe, Indiana in about 1747. Died in 1846. The father of this great man was a brave by the name of Wabshkun, and his mother was called Majwes. These two persons, by their connection, had three children, who were Black Pheasant, an unrecorded name, and Noxus, or Waubonsie, the youngest, Muckadapucky, alias Black Pheasant, or the elder brother of the subject of our biography, became a very celebrated and distinguished leader of war parties, and Waubonsie often accompanied him. Waubonsie was raised in the strictest pure Indian manners and customs by his parents. As his demeanor and appearance promised, much of his anxious parents and no pains were spared in watching the youth's life, examining him very closely in his dreams. He was early trained to the use of the cold bath, that is, swimming or bathing, both in winter as well as in summer. This practice is severe, but healthy and bracing to the constitution of a man, and deemed by our nation of the same effect as that of fasting. He also practiced fasting while engaged in the chase, and was remarkable, while quite young, for his celebrity and hardihood, soon gaining the applause of being a famous hunter. In person, he was tall and straight, being 6 feet and an inch in height. He was rather given to silence, spoke but seldom, though not ill-natured, social than otherwise, rarely associated with young people in their games and plays, but he was one of the foremost in their sham fights of small bows and grass arrows, in which he manifested great coolness, daring, perseverance, and dexterity. He was extremely sober. It would only be on extraordinary occasions that he would be seen enjoying the Bacchavellian pleasures. It was soon known that he was brave to desperation by his joining war parties when as yet quite young, though much was said to dissuade and deter him from his design of attending belligerent parties. But neither entreaties nor threatenings would turn him from his purpose. On urging the matter too closely, he would only answer, "I am as much of a man as those who are going." And that was bringing everything to a close, and parents and friends could hope for no more satisfaction. It was with colleagued powers of the Chippewas, Odawas, and Potawatomis, Sac and Foxes, Kickapoos, Delawares, Shawnees, Menominees, several other tribes, he was first initiated into the ranks of the Braves. The above general march against the Peorias, Wees, and Pankashaws, who then were very numerous and powerful in arms, who had been guilty of national heinous and atrocious crimes and offenses, the above league, in which our hero is included, after long consultation and mature deliberations, decided to extinguish from the face of the earth these sinning tribes, to put out their fire, which means to exterminate the whole tribe or tribes. At the time of the council, having appointed the place of rendezvous, all met at the day and place and immediately marched against the said doomed tribes, and surrounded their towns and villages, and massacred without any regard to sex or age. The catastrophe of these guilty tribes was unaccountable and shocking, and in a short time the infuriated warrior could hardly find whereon to vent his unsatiated war club. For like all fallen braves, before a wind-carried fire, were this people disappearing, before the unerring blow of the savage war axe. Seeing no alternative, they begged quarter, and prayed to be spewed or vomited barely for the purpose of handing down their once great name or ancient greatness to coming generations. The savage arm rested, and a voice echoed they were spared. As Pagoshug, one of the chiefs, observed, not long since saying, "Look at them," talking of the Peorias, "now they are but a handful. When once the earth appeared too small for them, but by their pride, folly, and crime, they have destroyed themselves, hence from that crisis they will be called themselves our little brothers." In this massacre, Noxus showed himself a very active warrior and daring brave. Our hero marched against the Osages three times, always bringing scalps and prisoners. On one expedition, he captured 40 Osage prisoners. Black Pheasant marched from Terracoop, Indiana, against the Osages, then residing on the west of Missouri, as leader of a war party, in which Noxus was one of the first enlisted. For now the Osages had become the common enemy, for like offense of the Peorias, and they moved from the east side of the Mississippi to the western banks of the Missouri, eventually villaged themselves on the tributaries of the latter river, now called by Big and Little Osages, named after the tribes, which were then divided into two great parties or band, which is still the case to this day. From this time, Noxus outdared his brother, Black Pheasant, and in fact all that were in the party, in which were two great braves, Shabana and Pagoshug. Soon after this unparalleled transaction or feat of bravery, he began as a leader of war parties himself. It is at this time that he entered a fort by the porthole in the dead of night. His brother was the leader, and after a war council, they were about to return home in despair, they having so agreed but one man, and Noxus was the man, and demurred against the decision. He told them they were braves and their decision was derogatory to the title, and added, "I am the only brave man here. Tonight I will enter the fort, for they said the Osage's retreat or hiding place is inaccessible." This fort was kept by a trader named Pierre Chateau, in which the Osages had taken safe quarter. They were permitted entrance from the fact that it was rumored that some war parties were out from the north. The night came, the drum was heard, and singing and dancing inside the fort. They feared no foe, for they knew the gate was closed and barred. Each man of the party looked sad and disappointed, as they saw no hopes of returning home after such a long rout with laurels of honor, scalps, and prisoners. About 10 o'clock, the silence was broken by our warrior jumping upon his feet. He said, "Lee," an exclamation meaning "now, I will get a scalp or an Osage." His brother and others tried to dissuade him, but all in vain. At last, his brother told him, I will go with you. So saying, they left their day retreat or hiding place, Noxus with only his carbine in hand and his tomahawk in his belt, away toward the fort which was nearby. They made still or spirit-like steps, but the night being very dark, it was some time before he could find the porthole, having left his brother, Black Pheasant, about 20 places from the fort. Our night hero, now at the fort, made up his mind to leave his carbine at the hole and enter only with his tomahawk on him. It was with some trouble he crawled through. He made for the first cabin, which he thought was a kitchen, for it was pretty well provided with cooking utensils. Here he found a great many Osages sleeping. He lit a torch and looked around. He found what he supposed to be the monster Osage, who was represented as having horns. He made a pass at him, but missed his blow. The next pass was parried off by the horned monster with his buffalo robe, and every time he struck him, he bellowed like a buffalo, from which animal he made his people believe he was derived or came. At last he made such a noise that nearly all in the house were awake and crying aloud when they saw their chief and king in his bed, covered with blood. Here our hero was pushed and shoved by his half-awake enemies until at last he took a scalp and retreated to his porthole, where he narrowly escaped while in the act of creeping out. Some brushed his feet. Our hero was troubled with two or three ideas when he first entered the house. At first he thought he would steal a boy about 12 years old, but he was afraid he would make a noise and thus prevented his escaping from the fort. It being so dark, it was as much as he could do to find his way out, and so hotly was he pursued that he left his carbine standing on the outside of the porthole. He afterwards went against the Osages as they were the main enemy, and in this expedition he was successful, bringing as trophies many scalps and several prisoners, and some females and boys, which he and his party distributed among their friends and relatives. He gave these female captives unto marriage to his fellow braves, for he also had one presented to him by the famous warrior and leader, Mainpox. He adopted an Osage boy presented him as a son, who I have seen myself, by the name of Wajah, who was married to a Potawatomi woman and had several children by her. Wabansi treated this adopted son as tenderly as though he had been his own proper son. He proved successful in every war expedition, but he said he regretted the time he wounded the horned Osage as much as he would have proved unsuccessful in some of his war excursions. This Osage was much spoken of on account of certain bumps or perturbances that grew on his head, resembling those seen on the head of a calf before its horns appear. So he passed himself off for a monster, renascent from that family of the animal kingdom. This uncommon man, after this nocturnal affray with our brave, sent him word to come and see him. He would like to make friends with him, to which our hero replied he did not wish to make friendship with the devil. About this time, the warrior of this peace began to highly conspicuous in the war. His renown and fame, as it were, spread to the south, west, and north, for as the south he had marched against the Peorias, at the west the Pawnees, Ottawas, Osages, Kaws, and the Sioux. So he stood respected and feared by the surrounding tribes, as will be seen hereafter. He headed a party of warriors on White River, Indiana, and in the act of capturing a provision boat, he nearly lost his life. There were braves of several tribes which formed his party: Sauks, Kickapoos, Menominees, Winnebagoes, Ottawas, and Potawatomis. After having shot down nearly the whole crew, our hero proposed to jump into the river and make prisoners of the balance and draw the boat to shore. Wabansi, warrior chief of the Potawatomi Nation. The people will know me and always call me Wabansi, signifying the dawn of day or causer of paleness. When I kill an enemy, he turns pale, resembling the first light of day. He was the strongest man in our national councils, according to his biographer. Was as a serpent in Indian diplomacy and national affairs in general, and a master judge of human nature.
Thank you, Sam. That was a really great narrative that you did right there. Really enjoyed it. Hey, I hope y'all enjoyed this fabulous Thanksgiving episode that we had for this week, right? Next week we'll get back to the grind. Happy holidays. Spend time with your friends, family. Stay masked up. You know, if you just think about, there's a baby. If you just think about what small measles, smallpox, everything else did. Just mask up. Just mask up. Sam, you have anything you want to add to the end of this Thanksgiving special? If not, miigwech for listening. Yiguin.